Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Okay, all of you who had money on the they'll never bring Munn back after the last time he made a mess of this show, you lost. It's Jeff Munn here for Brad Sessmatt. I'm kidding, of course. And we're delighted to be with you on a Thursday. Yes, I am sporting the correct logo. Correct logo. Most of this ASU stuff I've got is a logo behind that other company in Oregon with the swoosh, and they've been telling me you got to update stuff. So I have my new ASU women's basketball polo. Season starts November 11th. And basketball will be one of the things we talk about today, but we're going to go all over the map as we like to do on this show because that's one of the things this show does really well. We will talk in a moment about last night's World Series game, last night's Suns opener. Jimmy Vaccaro from the South Point Casino Resort will be here for his weekly visit. He operates the sports book at South Point, and we'll talk about this weekend's football games. And an interesting angle to it, and if you read the column that I wrote that hit the Sports 360 AZ website yesterday, you'll know one of the things I'm going to bring up to Jimmy Vaccaro. It's Thursday. We'll go to the movies with Bill Gutekunst. Three really interesting films that Goody will offer his thoughts on, including one directed by Ron Howard, and Bill did a recent interview with Ron Howard, so it'll be interesting to hear his thoughts on that as well. And we've got a lot of other things we can talk about during the course of this here program. I am not operating as a solo act. We've got Jared Nielsen. We've got Eric Sorensen. They'll put Eric on camera.
Hi, it's me.
See, there he is. He's. I hear you, but I don't. Oh, there you are, up there. It's like the Brady Bunch. I look up and wave. You know, the other day, I know we've got things to talk about. Mm-hmm. You know, last night, for some reason, they were showing a Very Brady sequel on one of those movie channels, and I watched it. Hadn't watched it before. Man, that was dumb. That was dumb. But it was so dumb, you kind of got where they were going with it.
I would love to just watch you in your living room watching a Very Brady sequel.
Yeah,
just to be in the back of the room or fly on the wall to just watch you watch that.
Shelley Long, really just, she was great.
Yeah.
She absolutely got, because you have to think about what she's trying to do. She's being Florence Henderson playing Carol Brady.
Yep.
And she just got it. Perfect. But that's not what we're here to talk about.
Thank goodness.
And don't go anywhere, because I always appreciate your input on these things.
Okay.
Let's start with the World Series. Cubs even the series at a game apiece, a 5-1 win. Kyle Schwarber, and this is one of the great things about baseball, the quirky things about baseball. Kyle Schwarber, prior to Tuesday night, the last baseball he played was here at Chase Field in April, tore his knee, thought he was going to be gone for the season, but he's back. 2-for-4 night at the plate, drove in a couple of runs. The key for the Cubs in this series is I've got one of my dearest friends in the world is a Cub fan, and I've been kind of guiding him through the season, pointing out things to him. And I told him, I said, the key for the Cubs in this series is to score early and not put Terry Francona in a position where he can utilize his bullpen when he wants to. There's an old saying in baseball, use your bullpen when you want to, not when you have to. So the Cubs got a run in the first, a run in the third, three in the fifth inning, which essentially knocked Trevor Bauer. Bauer was out of the game in the fourth. But Terry Francona was in a position where he had to utilize his bullpen from behind rather than ahead, which is what he did a great deal in the league championship series and in game one on Tuesday night. Jake Arrieta, a no-hitter into the sixth, was pulled in the sixth, gave up a run on two hits. Mike Montgomery, two innings. Aroldis Chapman, a four-out save. And while it worked out okay, gave up just a walk, struck out two. He's been on the record as saying, I don't want to pitch in the eighth inning. And while Joe Maddon went to him and said, we need you in the eighth, can you do it? And he said, fine, I'll do whatever you ask. I still think putting players in positions they're not accustomed or comfortable handling is eventually going to come back to bite you. But for the time being, did you want to offer something on that, Mr. Sorensen?
No, I just thought the kiss of death last night for Cleveland was, if you were watching the game, and one of the most fascinating things I like to watch when I watch full baseball games, which, mm-hmm, full disclosure, isn't that often.
I understand.
I love to monitor, especially in big games, pitch counts. And if you notice Trevor Bauer's pitch count in the second inning, he was already in like the high 40s, low, yeah, 50s. And I don't have to tell you, Mon, that's just a recipe for, we're going to use the bullpen a lot unless you bounce back and have like a couple 10 to 12 pitch innings, and that didn't happen.
Well, and I think that's been, and actually it's my buddy the Cub fan that points it out to me, that that's been the Cubs' approach all year long. Long at bats, patient at bats, drive the pitch count up. That's a Theo Epstein thing, a Billy Beane thing that goes all the way back to the start of Moneyball. And then Theo took it to Boston, and in, obviously with the Cubs. And the idea being you want to get into the bullpen as early as you can. The antidote to that was what has gone on in Kansas City, where they said, okay, we're gonna build our bullpen as strong as we can, and we're going to make you pay for getting into the bullpen early in the ballgame. That's kind of the Cleveland formula, and it's worked very well for Terry Francona so far through this postseason. But again, to me, the key is make that bullpen operate behind on the scoreboard, and then they're not quite as effective.
And on the flip side for the Cubs, I'm going to throw another baseball term out here for you because you love them just as much as anyone. I'd have to say Jake Arrieta, the former TCU Horned Frog, just had to get that in there. Effectively wild, is that the correct baseball term?
I would say that in the sense that if you don't...
He went through stretches where he could not find the plate, yet somehow in the sixth inning he had allowed no hits. And he was still in the game and he was with a lead and... He's a tough guy to hit, especially for right-handed hitters because of his arm angle and how he comes at you. But it's a 42-degree night, and he's all over the place. Couldn't really have great command of any of his pitches, but somehow he managed to get through and make the pitches when he had to.
Well, and that's the key, and I tell people this all the time. I have a lot of people come to me and say, well, this reliever's not good because he lets people on base. And I always say to them, the other night with Andrew Miller, he had the bases loaded, but he got out of it not allowing a run. And I always tell people, the stat is earn run average, not earn base runner average. You know, okay, fine. How many guys have we seen over the years in baseball, especially closers, and they let base runners on, but they don't let them in. So the idea is keep a zero in the run column. So game three is Friday night at Wrigley Field. It will be Kyle Hendricks against Josh Tomlin. And I think it does favor the Cubs slightly. Let me get to the Suns on a couple of fronts very quickly. Suns did lose last night to the Kings. It wasn't pretty. 113-94. It's a young team. That stuff's going to happen. And even though it was a blowout and a rough night, Cousins with 24 points was pushing and shoving with Devin Booker. Gosh, I knew I was going to do that. Rudy Gay with 22 points. It's a very young team. I mean, a really young Suns team, and they're going to have nights like that, even against a team that's running guys like out like Aaron Aflalo and Rudy Gay and DeMarcus Cousins. It's just going to happen. The bigger news of the night last night, and I'll editorialize on this right up to the break. The Suns made an announcement at the end of the first quarter that has, if you want to talk about an announcement that's long overdue, here it is. Al McCoy is going into the Suns Ring of Honor. When I worked at the Suns and the Ring of Honor was established, there was a rule that a person who was eligible for the Ring of Honor had to be out of the organization for a period of time. And I was made the contention, well, look, Al McCoy is going to be the broadcaster for this team as long as he's breathing. So why would you, and they did, and this happened with Cotton Fitzsimmons. Cotton Fitzsimmons was a lifer with the Suns. And they waited until he had gone from this earth to put him in the Ring of Honor. And that was wrong. It was just wrong. And I am congratulations and a tip of the cap to Robert Sarver, to Jason Rowley, and the management of the Suns for not repeating that mistake. They are going to honor Al on March the 3rd, as they should. And he should go into the Ring of Honor. He should have been in the Ring of Honor a long time ago. And I'm going to say this, too, at the risk of offending some people in my own line of work. There are people in this town, I'm not going to name names, that have been wondering for a long time, when's Al going to retire? He's getting old. Listen, there's two reasons that some people bring that up. It's because they want the job. Let me tell you something. There ain't one of us in this town, not one of us, me included, who's capable of stepping into those shoes. So we all ought to drop the subject for a couple of reasons. Number one, as I said, nobody is capable of being Al McCoy. The second thing is, if you listen to the game last night on the radio, let me tell you something. I don't care how old he is. Man's at the top of his game. He was crisp. He was sharp. He had every detail. So those of you in the business, and you know who you are sitting there grousing about, Well, McCoy's getting so old. Well, you and I both know why you're grousing about it. You want his job. Shut up. He's at the top of his game. Knock it off. Just go to March 3rd, stand and applaud. And then when the ceremony's over, sit down and shut up. Al McCoy is a legend for a reason, because he has exceptional talent even at this point in his life. Even now, he's better than any other play-by-play guy in this town. That includes Dave Pasch, and Dave Pasch will be the first one to say it. He's better than any other basketball announcer in the NBA. He's better than any other basketball announcer in the game, and I'm one of them. So, you know what? They didn't whisper in L.A., when's Vin Scully going to step down? So, you know what? If they don't do that in L.A., let's not do it in Phoenix. Let's just all just honor the man, because he's going to be there for a long, long time to come, just as it should be. So, kudos to the Suns for honoring Al the way they should, and not waiting until it's too late. And that's I stand and applaud if I could, but the camera won't go with me. Robert Sarver and Jason Rowley for making that decision. All right, we are going to talk football. Jimmy Vaccaro out at the South Point in Las Vegas, and 10 o'clock kickoffs for West Coast teams. Is it that big a deal? We'll ask a guy who has to research these things. Coming up next on the Brad Sesmatch Show, Sports360AZ.com. We partner with AZCentral.com. Brad Sesmatch Show, Jeff Munn for Brad on this Thursday. We join you on Sports360AZ.com and AZCentralSports.com, and we're glad to have you along with us. About a month from now, my daughter and I will make the trek up, what is it? It's State Route 93 to US 95. Into Las Vegas, and we will pull into that beautiful, big, roomy garage at the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Resort. They will host their annual Thanksgiving shootout. The ASU women's team will be playing there. That's why I'm going. And that always gets me to thinking about our pal Jimmy Vaccaro, who works at the South Point Casino Resort as their bookmaker. I also hear that he's personally responsible for setting the menu for their Thanksgiving buffet. So I'm really excited to talk to Jimmy today. That's kind of a joke, Jimmy, but I know that I know you visit the steakhouse there and the buffet every once in a while, right?
Yes, quite a bit, and thank you for the nice compliments. And when you and your daughter here, please come up and see me, and I'll take care of you for a nice dinner with whoever you're with.
I'd love it. That's the part of your job that I think a lot of people probably overlook. You're not a Monday through Friday guy most of the year. Because you got to be there when the games are going on, right?
Well, yeah, but you know, most of it is anymore. It's just simply that there's always something going on. So even if you're not there, your phone constantly rings. And in today's world, with what we're doing, and obviously there's just so many things. You look just today, you know, what we got the Thursday night game, we got obviously, we got five college football games, and hey, we got a World Series starting tomorrow again after the season started 1-1. So it's nonstop, but it's the best thing I've ever done. It's the most fun I've ever had. And you know what? I still a lot of energy. I'm going to be around for a long time.
Outstanding. Let's get right into it. One of the things this week about the Cardinals-Panthers game, and it's been discussed a lot in the media here, originally that game was scheduled to be played at 4 o'clock Eastern. It's not as attractive a game, so Fox swapped out Packers-Falcons, moved that to the late window, put the Cardinals. And there's a perception here, Jimmy, that the Cardinals just don't play well when they have to go back east and play at 10 a.m. Pacific time, which is 1 o'clock in the east. I don't agree with that, but let me ask you as an odds maker, do you take kickoff times under those circumstances into consideration?
Yeah, not as much as we used to, only because the travel is obviously different now. When, you know, if you're 30 years ago, if they had to fly commercial and land somewhere and get to the other place, that'd make a little bit of a difference. Is it still there? Do we still understand it? Do we adjust a little bit? Yes, but not quite as much as we used to. Things are quite different now. I mean, I think Arizona, no matter what time that they play, and Carolina, this is one of those games where if they played at 12 o'clock midnight, I think they better be ready to play. But to answer your question, it's not as imperative as it once was, only because the travel is much easier. Doesn't mean that they like it. Doesn't mean that the coaches have less of a time for their game planning. But once again, Things are quite different than they were 30 years ago on traveling east to west, west to east, the time zones and everything else. So it, as we call it out here, young man, we call it, it's in the number anymore. We incorporate all of that without even thinking twice. We just understand what it is. And sometimes, depending what team it is, we adjust maybe a half a point to a point and a half. But it's in the number. You're not sneaking up on anybody.
Jimmy Vaccaro, the odds maker at the South Point Casino Resort, joining us for his weekly visit on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Jeff Munn for Brad. When you look at both these teams, I think, Jimmy, and we'll get to the other games that we want to talk about in a minute. Both of these teams, to me, if you say, what's the problem with both teams, I immediately point to the offense and say, they're just not. I know the Cardinals rolled up 470-plus yards Sunday night. They're just not scoring enough points.
Well, it's fairly obvious. You can have all the yards you want, but if you don't put it in the end zone and settle for field goals, you're going to do exactly what happened to both these teams last week, was simply, trying to have a drive at the end that means something. I don't know what the problem is personally, but I can tell you, you don't win championships if you have to win by kicking field goals. You look on paper and you say, you guys have a little more trouble doing this, or a little more trouble doing that. But there's one thing we do know: you can't make the big play. And let's be honest about it. Also, other than a few bright moments for Cam Newton, it's been the same thing with the Carolina Panthers. Here's a game that, it's basically a 2.5 point favorite, Carolina. That's just telling you that both teams aren't doing that much. That's just telling you also on a neutral field, it's a dead even game on two teams that really haven't proven that they're right now pedigreed to win a championship.
A couple other of the interesting pro games on the weekend, Patriots-Bills, and the Bills have been an interesting story. I know they lost last week, but there's always something about Rex Ryan and Bill Belichick, and I guess what we would say is, since the game is in Buffalo, yeah, you get a little bit of consideration to the Bills, but this is a game where we'll really find out if these guys are for real or not.
Well, let's call it like it is. They don't like each other, and it's been going on for a long time. The Buffalo Bills did have some what I would consider very, very good wins for them. In New England, 3-1 coming out of the four-game suspension, they had a sign for that way back in August, and that's exactly what they got. And Brady, even though he's not playing top notch, he's still obviously playing well enough to win. Last week, he beat up the beleaguered Pittsburgh Steelers team. And, you have, once again, exactly what you should have. Patriots, the Buffalo Bills may be thinking for the first time, this may be the time to absolutely maybe dethrone the Patriots in that division. It's going to be hard, but the Patriots are a 6-point favorite on the road, exactly what they should be. They shouldn't be no less. There's still, we'll see money on the Patriots in what we call our teaser bets and what are called our parlay card bets. They'll be probably about 2.5 to 1 ticket-wise, Patriots over the Buffalo Bills. But the young surge quarterback for Buffalo seems to be making the difference now. It won't be easy. It's a relatively right where it should be total, 47.5, so it's not going to be a shootout. But I think the game, again, is won or lost in the last quarter. We'll see what happens. Patriots, a 6-point road favorite, exactly where they should be right now. Ticket count, like I said, a little bit, about 2.5 to 1 with the Patriots, but there'll be Buffalo money that shows if his game reaches 7, which it probably will come Sunday morning.
The one other game that I want to touch about on the NFL weekend, and we're talking with Jimmy Vaccaro at the South Point Hotel and Resort, Packers-Falcons, which was the game moved into the late window for Fox. I'm confused about two things, and I just need a quick comment from you on both. Falcons, I don't know if I'm buying in yet, because they had a big lead on San Diego at home last week and let the Chargers back into the game, and a very risky decision in overtime basically cost them the game. The Packers, I don't know what people are being so critical of the Packers about. They are 4-2. Yes, I know that, they've had some lackluster performances, but, as Bill Parcells once said, you are what your record says you are. They're 4-2. So I think people are underselling the Packers and overselling the Falcons.
You might be right there, but let's call it like it is. Last week, that was probably our worst game of the day with the Atlanta Falcons, up 17. But as we've seen probably in the last 4 or 5 years, Jeff, is simply that the Falcons just fall apart at this time during the season. That would have been a great signature win last week. It was 27-10, and they wound up losing the game. And like everybody else that saw what you saw, I don't know whether it was bad coaching or bad timing or whatever, but they pulled some bonehead plays in the fourth quarter. The Packers, not that Aaron Rodgers has been playing lights out, that's fairly obvious to anybody who follows the game. At this game, if when we put these things way back up in May, we actually had the Packers about a 2.5-point favorite. But the Packers looked a little trouble running the football. It looks like the guys can't separate as they once did for Rodgers. But, you know, you still going to make the Falcons a favorite. The home is the highest total of the weekend, 53 points. And I would suggest that if you like the over, bet it not, because it will be money showing. But you're right. Here are two teams. It's basically hard to figure out. But I can't tell you this. We'll have more Packer money only because what we saw last week with the Falcons, only what we saw up 17 and losing the game, and what we've seen in the past 5 years. When they get to the middle of the season, they simply go in reverse, but it should be an entertaining game, no matter who wins it.
Jimmy Vaccaro, the odds maker at South Point Hotel, and just a quick plug, if you're in Las Vegas, I had a guy asked me last night, he's going to go to this tournament, and he said, I'm not really into the Vegas stuff. And I said, well, South Point's okay because you've got a big movie theater, bowling center, arcade. That's more for the kids. But there's a lot of things to do that aren't really related to the casino gaming. And so if you're in Las Vegas, it's called South Point because it's south of the Strip. You just go down I-15, and it's one of those you can't miss it deals. Let's turn to the college game, the college weekend, Jimmy. Let's start with the local team. ASU goes up to Oregon. Oregon, if you had told me 2 years ago when they're playing Ohio State in the college football title game that they were going to be the mess that they are now, I wouldn't have believed it. And yet it is Eugene. It's on turf. I'm not sure what the weather forecast is, but it won't be as warm as it is here. Even though Oregon's struggling, you can't really go up there overconfident if you're ASU, right? Did we lose Jimmy? We might have lost him, and we'll just tap dance here for a second till we get him back. And while we have a moment to reconnect with Jimmy, I'll just check on the weather forecast for you for that game on Saturday up in Eugene, Oregon. I believe they're calling for rainy and 60 degrees at kickoff on Saturday. So that, and it is on turf. So it will impact things a little bit from the Arizona State perspective. But Oregon is 2-5, 0-4 in the Pac-12, an unthinkable position for them to be in at this point. And it's shocking. The game of the weekend, and when we get Jimmy back here, we'll get a thought from him on it, is Washington at Utah, at least in terms of the Pac-12. It is a 12:30 kickoff up in Salt Lake City. And there's no question that that is probably, from Washington's standpoint, they have the Apple Cup against Washington State, which is growing more and more to look like a battle of ranked teams. But I really think that this Saturday's game, ESPN College Game Day, will be in Salt Lake City. That's pretty much the last major test until the Pac-12 title game, unless Washington State just keeps rolling along. We've got Jimmy back. Jimmy, I was just mentioning a moment ago, ASU goes to Oregon. The weather forecast, rainy, 60 degrees at kickoff. Not terrible weather, but ASU, they've struggled a bit in recent weeks. A home loss to Washington State. Even though Oregon has just fallen apart, you can't go into that game if you're ASU thinking, oh, this will be an easy time of it.
Yeah, call it like it is. They're both struggling. We go back to the 1st of September. We thought there'd be much better results for both teams. Was it Arizona State's time to step out and obviously, you know, make some national headlines? They really haven't gotten there. Even the games that they won, they actually looked, to some degree, relatively sloppy doing it. And Oregon just fall flat on their face. This guy may be quickly gone if they continue what it is. It's a non-issue game for a couple reasons. First of all, they have lost their marquee value, especially Oregon has. It's in the middle of the afternoon here, 2:00, and there'll be people who are geared into the 12:30 starts and waiting for the 4:30 to start. So this game is there. The price is right, 7.5, Oregon the favorite. Total, very high at 78. And anytime you get into late October, early November, in that part of the country, you have to keep track of the weather. So the 78 might look a little bit high if you were asking me personally. But like I said, Oregon's 7.5-point favorite. I don't believe that number moves at all till we get to game time.
We've got about a minute left. The other big game, and it's in the Pac-12, is Washington, Utah, and Salt Lake City. To me, this is the last big hurdle for the Huskies until the Apple Cup game with Washington State. And Utah, because it's Salt Lake City, probably doesn't get as much attention as it should at 7-1 and 4-1 in the Pac-12. But this is the game of the year, I think, in the Pac-12 as far as the conference race is concerned, and Washington's trying to stay in the hunt for a CFP berth.
No, you're exactly right. I mean, two excellent football teams having excellent years. Washington, we knew was better. Now, obviously, as you've seen, they're ranked in the top five of the country. Utah, this kid is a great story, the Utah running back, but they should be a home dog, and they are, because Washington's playing just so doggone good. I wouldn't mind seeing a Washington or team like Washington in the Final Four, only because with all the playoff talk that we're talking about already, it's good to have one team that nobody expected to be there to go up against the Ohio State and the Alabama, exactly like what they are. But Washington, 10-point favorite. Utah, kind of hard, laying 10 with a team like Utah. Well coached, control the ball well, make very, very little mistakes. So a very good game, and it's a 12:30 start, and I can guarantee you there will have a lot of action on that game, young man.
Yeah, you're right, and you mentioned the 12:30 games get a lot of attention, and that is a 12:30 mm-hmm. game as well. Jimmy, appreciate the info. Have a good weekend. We'll see you up there around Thanksgiving. My daughter and I are both making big plans to push through the line at the Thanksgiving buffet, so if you're looking for us, that's where to find us that night.
It's taken care of. Just stop in the sports book and I'll take care of you.
Okay, Jimmy, thanks. Jimmy Vaccaro, the odds maker at the South Point Casino Hotel. And again, just a shameless plug, ASU will be there Thanksgiving weekend, women's basketball, to play in the South Point Thanksgiving shootout. A gentleman asked me last night and said, gee, I'm not really into the casino thing, but is South Point a good place to go? Absolutely. It's one of those, you've got everything right there in the building, movie theater, bowling center, arcade, all kinds of great stuff. And there'll be lots of college basketball going on that weekend. So if you're an ASU fan, if you're an ASU women's basketball supporter, I heartily recommend getting up there for that event. We'll talk a little more football. This whole thing about 10 o'clock kickoffs and the Cardinals just is wearing me out. And I'll explain why coming up in the next segment. And I was talking a little bit earlier about Al McCoy. I'm going to just riff for one more minute about Al in another sense, and I'll get to that. This is the Brad Sesmatch Show, sports360az.com. We partner with azcentralsports.com, and we're partnering with you today, and we're pretty happy about it, too. On a Thursday, in advance of a big weekend of sports, and you look everywhere, you've got basketball, you got football, you got the World Series. Not bad. I'm Jeff Munn. I'm in for Brad Sesmatch today on the Brad Sesmatch Show. I wanted to, and I, if you were with us at the start of the show, and if you weren't, why? I wanted to just go into a little bit of detail about something I kind of got on a roll about, and that's Al McCoy. If you haven't heard the news, Al will be inducted in the Suns Ring of Honor. And I got a little fired up about people who, in our industry, solely in our industry, who whisper from time to time, when's he going to step down? And they do that because, I'm going to share a dirty little secret with you, they want his job. Listen, a couple of years ago, I had the grand honor of filling in for Al on some road games. And there were a few people that were theorizing that was because I was the heir apparent. I'm not the heir apparent. None of us who do play-by-play in this town are heir apparents to Al McCoy. So just stop it. It ain't going to happen. And Al's not going anywhere. So this is a non-subject, people. You got to drop it. And it's not even worth talking about. Just appreciate. I wrote a column about this on this website about a month ago. For goodness sakes, just appreciate what you have. The Dodgers just said goodbye to Vin Scully. We have a Vin Scully in Phoenix. His name is Al McCoy. And you should just listen to the radio every night. I know we're a TV society. But you ought to listen to the radio every night and just savor it like a good aged glass of wine.
As our good mutual friend Eddie Johnson says about LeBron James.
Yes.
Appreciate the greatness.
Exactly.
Appreciate the greatness.
And that's all you have to do. And on March the 3rd, I think I'm going to be up in Seattle at the Pac-12 Women's Tournament, unfortunately. Mm. But the rest of us, all of us in this business, in this industry, news, sports, DJs, we ought to all go that night and stand and applaud.
So do you think, because I'm just throwing this out there hypothetically, do you think this is Al's last year, and do you think that's
No.
part of the reason why this is all happening on March 3rd?
I don't know why they're doing it March 3rd, but let me just tell you something, and again, this is pulling the curtain back a little bit. I've always believed when people say to me, how long will Al go? Al will go as long as he wants, and Al should go as long as he wants, because what else is he going to do? Sit on a couch? And again, if Al was wandering all over the road, and if Al was mumbling and stumbling his way through games, then you could make a case for it. But just go listen, you know, all you have to do is listen to him do a game. The man is at the top of his game right now. And so, number one, no, I don't think this is last year. Number two, he should go as long as he wants to go. And I'm not saying that from the standpoint of what the club's going to decide. They've always left it in Al's hands. And he loves what he does. He's great at it. Why stop? So, no, I don't think it's his last year. I just think this is a good thing that the Suns are doing. And it used to be that you had to be out of the organization getting the Ring of Honor. They're changing that to get Al in there. And I couldn't be happier that they're doing that, because he should be the one to stand there and take the applause when that happens. And he's going to get a lot of it. Let me, with the time I have left in this segment, talk about something. And you may have read the column I wrote about 10 o'clock kickoffs. A lot of media in town. Gee, I'm being awfully mad at the media today here in town. And I'm really not that bad a guy, am I? Do I really get upset with the media a lot, Eric?
No comment.
Okay. There's been a theory, and it's been going on for years, that anytime the Cardinals go east to play a 10 o'clock game, they're doomed. And number one, that's not always the case. And number two, and Jimmy Vaccaro just pointed this out. This is 2016. Teams play, when they go east, when they go anywhere, they fly on charter aircraft. They can dictate when they go, what time they go, how many days they go. So, and it's all done in consideration of making certain that everybody's body clocks are adjusted to a different time zone. From my own experiences traveling with baseball and basketball, I have always found it much easier to travel east and adjust my body clock to the Eastern time zone than going to west. Last year, ASU played in a tournament in Hawaii at Thanksgiving. I've been there twice. I cannot deal with a three-hour time change. I would wake up every morning at 3 a.m. It's the middle of the night in Honolulu. What are you going to do? There's just nothing you can do about it. And I'd try to go back to sleep, and I couldn't go back to sleep. You've been to Hawaii, haven't you, Eric?
I have.
Have you struggled with the time change?
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. It's just everything there, it's odd, because sporting events start at like 1 in the afternoon. We were there in the summer, my wife and I.
Yeah.
And I was just flipping through the TV during lunch,
mm-hmm.
and it was Monday Night Baseball at 1 in the afternoon.
Right.
Like, what?
Yeah. And the NFL day starts, I think, at 7 a.m.
Yep.
in Honolulu.
It does.
I'll never forget, the first time I went was 09. I took my son with me. It was Thanksgiving Day. We get in our rental car. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Hawaii time. Turn on the radio. The Sunday night Thanksgiving, or the Thursday Thanksgiving night game on NBC was the Giants and Broncos. And they're at halftime. And I'm thinking, what? Halftime? It's 3 o'clock. And, yeah, it's a totally different deal in Hawaii than anywhere else, obviously, in the U.S. My point is this. I think just saying they're playing at 10, they've got no chance, that's just an excuse. It's a crutch. And it's not a valid excuse. Guess what, kids? Oakland went to Jacksonville last week and won. They're going to Tampa Bay this week. Have you heard any complaints out of Oakland? Has anybody with the Raiders said, oh, woe is us, we got to play at 10? No, you haven't. Has Bruce Arians, has Steve Keim, Michael Bidwell, have any of them complained about a 10 o'clock kickoff this Sunday? No. No. Go look it up. Nobody with the Cardinals is making a big deal out of it. So if they're not making a big deal out of it, we shouldn't make a big deal out of it. And the other thing, I'm a big believer in, if you say something enough, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If Cardinal players and Cardinal coaches get asked repeatedly about, whoa, what are you going to do about a 10 o'clock kickoff in Charlotte? Pretty soon they're going to start to think to themselves, is there something to this? And again, I don't think there is. When you're in a given city, when I've traveled back east with both baseball and basketball, you adapt immediately to the time zone you're in. I'll tell you a quick story, and I just need to double check how much time we've got to tell this. I remember one time I'm with the Diamondbacks in Pittsburgh, And just a little inside baseball talk here. When they connect with the radio station for the broadcast, you get the sound of the radio station in your headset. And it's about 5:30 Eastern Daylight Time. And I had just come back from having dinner in the press dining room. And I sit down, I put on my headsets, and I'm listening to the beginning of the afternoon drive program on the station that carries the games. And it just kind of threw me. I'm like, afternoon drive? Wait a minute. And I remembered, oh, it's 2 o'clock or 2:30 back home. You adapt to the zone you're in. And keep in mind, too, that on game day, players will take a bus to the stadium way before kickoff, get suited up, put on some amount of the uniform, get taped up, go out and warm up, come back, put on the pads. If you're not wide awake by the time you've done all that, that's a huge issue. The players will be ready to go at 1 o'clock Eastern.
Are the Cardinals going to win on Sunday?
I don't know, because I know that Bruce Arians has said, boy, that was a great game we played Sunday night. Look, I'm not the biggest Bruce Arians fan in the world. I admire what he's done, but there are things he does sometimes that kind of make me go, I understand what he's saying. They gained, 470 yards against the Seahawks? But they only scored 6 points. And to me, it's like the tie itself. You don't really know what to make of it. Yeah, they gained 470 yards. How come they didn't hit the end zone? Some of the credit goes to Seattle. I don't know, because I can't figure out Carolina either.
Oh, and the Cardinals have been, they've only played 2 road games. They got blown out in Buffalo. Then they went to San Francisco and played the Thursday night game, where yes, they won convincingly,
yeah,
but the first half was not good. And last year they were so good on the road. That was one of the biggest strengths of this team. I just wonder emotionally and physically how much Sunday night, and they have the week, and then they have to travel back east. I don't know what to think, because Carolina's not any good, but
right.
It's still Carolina.
It's still Cam Newton.
Of course.
And I think, I know that, and Arian said it, and I agree with him, they could have played one more snap in that game because they were just drained. And by the way, I'm an old stick in the mud. I don't like the NFL overtime rules. Make it sudden death. I know coin flip decides everything, but you know what? You had 60 minutes to win that game, and if you didn't do it, then you're resigned to your fate. But I do think there's an emotional toll of tying that game because you didn't come out of it with a win. You needed a win. And they can say all they want, well, we didn't lose the game. No, you didn't win. What is it Herm Edwards says? Say it with us, kids. You play to win the game. Anyway, we're headed to the movies next. Bill Gutekunst with 3 really interesting films this week to review. And we'll do that after a break. Brad Sesmatt Show, Sports360AZ.com. We partner with AZCentralSports.com. Glad to have you with us on a Thursday. Hope you got a nice weekend planned. Well, you can be certain that they're not playing that music for me. It's Thursday, and it's time to go to the movies with our friend, AZ Central film critic Bill Gutekunst. Anytime I do this segment with Bill, I always like to duck in a little TV trivia. And before we get into 3 really good films for Bill to talk about this week, here's your little nugget that you may not have known, Mr. Gutekunst. You know how much I'm fond of the TV show My 3 Sons.
Yes.
I learned a couple weeks ago, I thought all along that show was created specifically for Fred McMurray. It wasn't.
Huh.
The original choice to play Stephen Douglas on My 3 Sons was, ready for it, Eddie Albert. And he turned it down, and then about a year later, he turned down another leading role in another TV sitcom. You ready for this one? He turned down the role of Wilbur Post on Mr. Ed.
Yeah, but he ended up on Green Acres.
He did. Same producer as the guy that produced Mr. Ed, so maybe that he just, got tired of being asked. So who knows?
Well,
anyway.
Green Acres had some really weird stuff during the trend. That stuff where, like, the chicken that laid square eggs and stuff.
Well, and they also did that break the third wall thing where they would talk about the credits at the start of the show. The credits would come up, and they would talk to each other about, did you know that so-and-so's producing this? Or he's the writer, or something like that. Anyway, we could do a whole segment on that. But let's get to the movies. The Ron Howard-Tom Hanks collaboration continues in a movie that I'm not a big drama fan, but I'm intrigued by Inferno. And it's a little bit misleading because you think Inferno, you think it must be like that movie about firefighters that Ron Howard did, but it's nothing like that.
No, it's actually, it refers to Dante's Inferno. And this is, Hanks brings back the character of Robert Langdon. It's based on those Dan Brown novels, Angels and Demons and all that, and the Da Vinci Code. And this time around, he starts the movie with amnesia. He can't remember who he is or that he's like super brilliant or any of that kind of stuff. So he has to fight through that. But it's sort of like one of those movies where, you know, you see these action movies sometimes where a guy falls off a building when he's running and he sort of breaks his leg in half, and then 5 minutes later he's running back at full speed. This is sort of like that, except it's his brain instead of his leg. Then it comes and goes as the plot needs it. I didn't like it that much, mostly because, I mean, I like Tom Hanks a lot, but it's one of those movies where this bad guy wants to make this really bad thing happen, which is typically the case in these movies, right?
Right.
This bad guy, at any point in this movie, before this movie started, in fact, could have done the bad thing and been done with it, and billions of people would have died, which was his goal. But he, instead of doing that, to make this bad thing happen, he set up this insanely complex series of events that only this one man in the world could figure out, which, why have him figure him out if he's also the only one who can stop him?
Right.
The place where those kind of things was probably best parodied was in the Austin Powers movies, where he says, you know, I've got you captive and I'm going to kill you, but first I'm going to explain this insanely complex plan that I have to try to
the slow, terrible death and that you'll have every chance in the world to escape from.
Right. That's sort of what this is like. But I did. I talked to Ron Howard and I enjoyed that. And he is, it's interesting because he's, you know, he sounds exactly like, well, he doesn't sound like Opie because he was little, but he sounds just like Richie Cunningham.
Yeah.
and he does not shy away from talking about that stuff. He loves Andy. I mean, he talked at length about sort of the genius of Andy Griffith and why that show worked and how it was, you know, they had a producer, they had a guy who created the show, and they had a showrunner who was a hands-on runner, but Andy was also a producer, and he had and it was really his vision of how the Andy Griffith show kind of captured everybody's imagination. But it's also interesting, whenever you talk to any of these guys, the way that they talk about business and money, and Ron Howard is really cognizant of that. He talks a lot about it. One of the things he's happy about is his movies, he doesn't talk about them making money, but he talks about them making a return on the investment that people make in them. And it's interesting to me because you don't usually think of them talking in those terms, you know?
Well, I don't know, and Bill Gutekunst, Central Film Critic, is with us. I don't remember seeing a lot, like Clint Eastwood. He rarely, to me, never talks about how much money the film makes. It's just the creative experience. And yeah, I mean, look, it's a business. They're in it to make money. But that is interesting to me that he would talk about it in those terms. I rarely hear directors. You don't hear the Spielbergs or the George Lucases or what have you. The Martin Scorseses talk about, I'm going to make a boatload of cash.
No, but they do talk about how hard it is to get money to make these things.
Right.
I talked to John Sayles once, you know, independent filmmaker, makes great movies. I always wanted to talk to him, and I thought we were going to have this arty conversation and everything. But for about half of it, it was sort of like talking to an accountant because especially for films of like a guy like him makes, it's so hard to make the money. It's so hard to find somebody to invest in it.
Yeah.
Now, even a small film is expensive. But I talked to Spielberg one time, and he was like, and again, I said, hey, how, you know, where do you come up with how do you decide? You can direct whatever you want. How do you pick what you're going to do? And he said, I don't care how successful I am. He said, it's still all about the good story and all that stuff. And he said, and I do what everybody else does. I find a story I like. I go around, and I try to get the financing for it and get people to help me pay for it. He said, the only difference with me is if I can't get all that financing, I just pay for it myself.
There are a lot of stories like that, and about, you know, especially the independent filmmakers trying to figure out some way to raise the money, because you have to have money up front to get these films to the screen. And you mentioned Andy Griffith, that we could go down a whole different road for about a half hour on that.
I'm from the South. This is a religion where I'm
right
now.
Well, okay. One little thing. I always thought Sheldon Leonard, who was one of the creative, the management people behind the start of that show, I thought he just directed the pilot. He did direct the first episode of season 6, which was the first episode in color and the first episode after Don Knotts left the show. I did not know that he had directed a second episode of the Andy Griffith Show, but he did. And why that matters, I don't know, but it was just trivial and it came to my mind. All right, let's move on. The Handmaiden, I watched the trailer for this, Bill. It's a Korean film, and I know that doesn't matter here nor there, but I'm watching the trailer, I'm thinking, is this a suspense movie or is it a soft porn movie?
The answer to all of that is yes, and more besides. It's kind of a puzzle movie. It's great. His last name is Park, the guy who directed Old Boy and does all this kind of crazy stuff. And it does, by the way, matter that it's Korean because it's set in Korea in the 1930s.
Okay.
During the Japanese occupation, and that identity of, you know, do I want to be Japanese? Do I want to be Korean? Is really big in this. It's based on a book that was set in Victorian England, but they moved it to this. And it's so good. It looks so great. And there is, I mean, the sex is really pretty explicit. But it's about this woman who goes to work as a handmaiden for this rich heiress who lives with her uncle in this kind of like mansion kind of place. But none of this is true. She's not really a handmaiden. She's really a pickpocket. The uncle is a rare book collector. But what you don't know, but you learn quickly, is that the rare books are all pornography, and people pay to come watch his niece read it. And there's a count who wants to marry her, but he's not really a count. He's just a con man who works with the handmaiden to try to get to have him marry her and then put her in an insane asylum and steal all her money. But everybody is backstabbing everybody else. It never stops, and it's told in three parts. From three different perspectives, and each one kind of changes a little bit what you know. It's not quite like Rashomon or something like that, but it's really enjoyable, and it's interesting that thing you said about the being Korean. Part of the movie's in Korean, part of it is in Japanese, and of course it's with subtitles. I speak neither language; I barely speak English.
Neither do I. I don't speak either language.
But they go back and forth. Like the Japanese is in yellow letters, and the Korean is in white letters, and it's all part of these people. Like. It's not just that nobody is who they seem to be. Nobody even wants to be who they seem to be. They're all, and it's really complex and but really satisfying and really good.
Yeah, so, in other words, have a good meal before you go to see it because your mind is going to get a workout.
Well, that and because it's almost 3 hours long.
Well, that too. Bill Gutekunst,
bring a snack.
Yeah, bring a snack or the concession stand will do a lot of business. Bill Gutekunst, AZ Central film critic, joining us. When I looked at the trailer for the pickle recipe, I came away thinking this has a My Big Fat Greek Wedding quality to it. In that you'll walk in the theater and think it may not be that good, and then you'll walk out and you won't stop laughing for 2 hours. Am I right?
No.
Oh, really?
you're half right.
you'll walk in not expecting much, and you'll leave not expecting much.
And your expectations will be met almost exactly. It's just too bad. It's a sweet kind of thing. And John Doerr, the guy who's he's trying to steal a pickle recipe from his grandmother. It's ridiculous. Doesn't make that much sense. But anyway, he is actually pretty good, and I think he could. You know, he'll be good. What's her name? And I spoke with her, I interviewed her. She was in Sex and the City, and she's and all that. She's the grandmother. She's a great actress, and she is so over the top. And she is everything about this movie is such a stereotypical Jewish grandmother, ethnic kind of comedy that it just all gets lost in there. There's some there's some funny stuff, but man, there's some real groaners too, and it's edited to make almost look like a TV movie. I don't know if that was the original plan or what, but evidently, you know, every now and then the screen will just, the action will stop and the screen will go black, and then you'll pick up another scene somewhere else.
Yeah, and that sounds to me, now that you've said it, it sounds to me like a film where, okay, we have all these one-liner jokes. Let's figure out a plot to stick them in. And,
we got these people we like, you know.
Right. Let's just give them something to do, and we'll kind of write a bunch of jokes around it. I think we have a little bit of extra time here left after we've talked about these movies, and I want to go back to the subject of Ron Howard. Oh, we got about 30 seconds. Okay. I'll give you 20 seconds to respond to this. I was telling my daughter the other night about Happy Days, and I said, you know what the really wild thing is? Henry Winkler is considered Hollywood royalty, and he really hadn't done much in Hollywood in front of a camera in the last 20 years, but he still walks on a set and people just fall to pieces.
It's impossible to say how big he was and how big that show was to somebody now, because the shows are not concentrated on a single audience like they were. There's too much fragmentation of the
right
audience now.
Yeah,
but the guy was huge.
He was, and if you watch MeTV at 8 o'clock, you'll start to get it. Bill, appreciate it. Enjoy your weekend at the movies. We'll talk to you next week.
You too.
Bill Goody-Kun, SAZ Central film critic. Hey, you know what? This is just an example of the things that we do on this show on a daily basis. You talk a little movies, talk a little sports, talk a little life. And we partner with azcentral.com, sports360.com, sports360az.com. Get you all kinds of great local sports information. We're coming up on a big, big football weekend. And if you want to know what's going on with your high school team, your college team, or that pro team with the bird on the helmet, you stick right here to sports360az.com. You'll know everything that's going on. And we appreciate you being with us today on the Brad Sesmet Show.